Hello and welcome to Meandering with Myrne, a potpourri of podcasts by me, veterinary ethologist Myrne Milani. Join me as I ponder any and all things animal and human, what we know and what we don't, where we've been, where we are, and where we're headed.
The start of primary elections got me thinking about politicians using animals to make political hay. This is hardly a new strategy. Politicians quickly learned that passionate, self-proclaimed animal lovers could be great assets to political success. And as people became more remote from nature and emotions replaced knowledge of animals, their value as single-issue voters gained importance in the political arena. This tendency plus their passion made and makes those animal lovers ideal supporters for politicians with limited or questionable credentials. Like other single-issue voters, single-issue animal lovers may be more willing to overlook any shortcomings those professed animal-loving politicians might possess. Ironically, these may include not supporting issues vital to animal survival. Issues like habitat destruction, air and water pollution, the effects of accelerated climate change, issues that already have caused the deaths of millions and in some cases billions of animals, and the extinction of entire animal species. Historically, one of the most famous examples of this blinder phenomena was the Nazi animal protection movement. Its historic value lies in its demonstration of the role context plays in human as well as animal behavior. Few animal lovers would question the idea of a strong government with a strong desire to protect animals. However, those with less passion and more critical thinking skill also would ask about the context in which such legislation is passed and enforced. Like those who supported the Nazi animal protection movement, many of us aren't fans of unnecessary and painful animal experimentation. But unlike the creators of the animal protection movement, most of us aren't fans of unjustified, painful human experimentation either. Like them, we're not fans of animal cruelty, but we're also not fans of human cruelty. Consequently, many found the idea that those who called themselves animal lovers had no trouble subjecting people to cruel and inhumane experimentation and punishment grossly, immorally incongruent. But at that time, there were animal lovers willing to overlook this horrific context. Fortunately, the current political climate in this country favors more benign animal legislation that politicians may use to woo single-issue animal lovers' support. Just before the 2020 election year geared up after New Year's, both houses of our relatively do-nothing Congress passed a revision of the Preventing Animal Cruelty Act. It added banning crushing small animals, videoing the process, and posting it to social media to the existing law. Obviously, no one in their right mind would support that kind of animal cruelty. However, some reports of this relatively small addition to an already existing and much larger Preventing Animal Cruelty Act implied that those who voted for the change created the entire act. Maybe some of them did help create it at one time, but maybe others just supported the addition so they could boast about it to the animal-loving voter bloc. Meanwhile, on state and local levels, the upcoming elections appear to have spawned a throng of proposed legislation forbidding the sale of dogs and cats in pet stores. In the past, the logic underlying such legislation was the desire to prevent emotion-based impulse buying of dogs and cats by the general public. However, some versions of the current proposed legislation also support the replacement of those banned puppies and kittens from known sources with dogs and cats from rescues and shelters. I question the wisdom of this. Emotion-based impulse acquisition would still remain a concern. It even could be worse, because rescue shelter animals often come with sad stories instead of concrete facts to increase their emotional appeal. Similarly, the sources of these animals would be much more variable in addition to sometimes being unknown. This creates a third concern. What standards will these shelters and rescues be held to regarding the quality of their animal sources? Logic says they should at least adhere to the same standards breeders and puppy mills must. Granted, there are rogue purebred breeders and puppy mills that don't, but all are required to meet the care standards defined in the Federal Animal Welfare Act and sometimes also more stringent state animal welfare requirements. Those who wish to provide quality animals or at least preserve their own reputations will meet and may even exceed these demands. Even if laws don't mandate it, common sense says that rescue or shelter animals should come with detailed information. This should include the animal's places of origin and medical and behavioral histories in any previous rescue or shelter locations. This is necessary for animal loving plus human and animal health reasons. It's also a politically sound strategy for those promoting the placement of these animals in public venues like pet stores. Some pet stores encourage potential customers to bring their own pets with them when they visit. In a common scenario, the customer's desire to purchase an animal for their own pets and plan to do a meet and greet with the pet store's offerings. It wouldn't benefit customers, their animals, the pet stores, or rescue or shelter suppliers if the customer's pets were exposed to a non-native disease or parasite transmitted by a shelter or rescue animal with minimal background information. We also live in an era where increasing numbers of people, including children, or their animals have conditions that undermine their immune responses. Many of these people and animals may show no obvious signs of disease. Do we want to expose them to dogs and cats from sources for which little traceable history exists? If we find pet stores selling purebred puppies and kittens from known sources morally and ethically troubling, can we justify using pet stores as conduits for shelter and rescue dogs and cats of unknown origins? Can we justify the replacement of quality background information with nothing but a maybe true, maybe not sad story? Especially in an environment like a retail setting that may consciously or subconsciously encourage emotion-driven impulse buying? I'd like to say that no animal-loving individual or politician would condone that. but history and knowledge of the human-animal bond in politics suggests that I might be wrong.
You've been listening to a podcast by veterinary ethologist Myrna Milani. For more podcasts, commentaries, and books about animal behavior and the human-animal bond, and links to behavior and bond sites, check out my website at www.mmilani.com. For more specific information, feel free to email me at mm@mmilani.com. All rights related to the content of these podcasts are retained by Myrna Milani. The background music, Molly on the Shore by Percy Granger, is used with permission from Catova Arts, www.catova.com.